Hi, this is Bill Arnold. Missed a show or need me talking to help you sleep tonight? I have several solutions to that situation. Here are the podcasts from the show. You are the best for listening and supporting Faith Radio. And a warm welcome to Afternoons with Bill Arnold. That would be me. I'm so glad we're together right now and that we can spend part of the afternoon. If you are in the car, make sure you keep your hands nice and secure on the wheel, eyes on the road, and just take in God's word. All right, here's one from Ephesians 4, verse 15. Instead, speaking the truth in love, we will grow to become in every respect the mature body of him who is the head, that is Christ. We're going to try to grow in our faith today. We're going to do it with some awesome guests. As you know, on Tuesdays, I always invite Rob Bluey, who's got a promotion of sorts. He's now the executive director, excuse me, Mr. I'm getting promoted all over the place. And then we're going to be joined then by a guy that I've never met before, but I'm excited to have him on. His name is Dr. Steve Argue. He's from Fuller Youth Institute, and we're going to talk about every parent's guide to helping teenagers and young adults thrive in their faith, family, and future. I've got three copies of his book I'm going to give away. And then from hour two, Jody Goldie is going to be in studio. We're going to take your questions. She is a psychologist who deals with trauma. So when trauma happens in your life, it sort of becomes part of your makeup, and you do have to deal with it. Interesting, the side effects that can be produced as a result. So after 60 seconds, Rob Bluey will join us.
Have you ever wished you could listen to your favorite radio program when you wanted to? That way you'd never miss a program you really wanted to hear, simply because your program came on when you had an appointment, you were at work, or something urgent came up. And for those really busy days, you could listen early in the morning or late at night when things were calmer, and you could take the time to reflect and meditate on what you heard. Well, you can listen to your favorite programs whenever you want. Download the Faith Radio app by searching Faith Radio in the Apple Store or Google Play Store to gain instant access to Faith Radio programs and previous shows. It really is that simple. Search and subscribe to your favorite program and listen anytime. Download the Faith Radio app today and don't miss a thing. Once again, go to iTunes or Google Play on your mobile device and search for Faith Radio to download the free Faith Radio app and start listening today.
You know, I love Tuesdays. I always get a chance to talk to Rob Bluey, who is now the executive editor of the Daily Signal. Go to dailysignal.com. You can learn all about Rob and all of his outstanding colleagues that write the truth, and they do investigative reporting that is, accurate. That's always a good thing. Rob, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate that introduction.
Yeah, of course. So let's start with this attack on this synagogue in California. It looks like the FBI got kind of a heads up before it happened, which makes it all the more evil, in my opinion.
Yeah. You know, it's troubling. I mean, we've seen attacks now consistently happening in places of worship, and personally, somebody of faith myself, I think it's deeply disturbing. It's also troubling when you find out that maybe a law enforcement didn't stop. I mean, we've talked about this on the show just last week in the case of Sri Lanka and some of the intelligence that didn't necessarily make it into the right hands. So I think that there's always an opportunity to be more vigilant. There have been a number of attacks that have been thwarted because police and other law enforcement did have information ahead of time. And we just have to hope, Bill, that they're doing their jobs. But I think there's also another thing at stake here. I think we need to tone down the anti-religious rhetoric in this country. I mean, I think so often people are motivated in ways because they're seeking vengeance, and unfortunately, it seems that whether it's a Jewish synagogue or an Episcopal church or Christians celebrating Easter, people around the world are being targeted because of their religious beliefs.
And now this gunman, he's 19 years old. He plays piano beautifully. He looks like he could work at Disney. And his parents said that he's one of five siblings raised in a family that rejected hate and taught that love must be the motive for everything we do. And they're just absolutely shocked and mystified that their son went into this mosque and opened fire, killing several people.
Right. Sometimes it's unexplainable, it seems. You don't necessarily understand why somebody is motivated or what is fueling that rage and anger and what would lead them to do something so horrific like this. But that's part of the unknown and what we're trying to figure out.
Yeah.
Whether it be a school shooting or a shooting at a place of worship, I think it's where people tend to be, at their most vulnerable because they're not expecting something like this to happen.
Right. Rob, do you think there's a rise in anti-Semitism in America right now?
There clearly is a rise in anti-Semitism in America, Bill. And I'll tell you what, we are having a discussion on this at the Heritage Foundation this week because we are so concerned about what we're seeing. We're having Congressman Lee Zeldin, who is a Republican, a Jewish member of Congress from New York, along with a rabbi. And we want to have a discussion about why that is. Why are we seeing an increasing percentage of anti-Semitic attacks? And what can be done about that? I think it's appropriate to have a conversation about solutions, bring people together. And I don't have an answer for why.
Mm-hmm.
I think that maybe social media and the internet and the connectivity that we have today brings people together and allows them to talk about these things in a way that perhaps we didn't necessarily were able to do in the past. But yeah, it's really troubling what we're seeing.
Now, I know that cartoonists and newspapers seldom apologize for their content, but the New York Times did apologize for publishing an anti-Semitic cartoon, which was Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu. He was drawn as a dog on a leash with a Star of David collar. What did you think of the Times apologizing for that?
Well, of course, at first they didn't apologize until they came under some additional pressure. So
right.
it took them two tries to get it right. I'm glad that they apologized. I think it was the correct decision for them to do so. Look, if you're running an international media company, I understand mistakes are going to happen. One, this glaring, it seems troubling for us to understand how something like this could go through an editor. They say it was either a lack of supervision or a poor editorial decision. But Bill, I can tell you, we publish editorial cartoons. We publish the Pulitzer Prize winning Michael Ramirez's editorial cartoons. We're very proud to have him on our staff. And I'll tell you, we carefully review what he's sending us because political cartoons, editorial cartoons, have a way of provoking those kind of reactions, and this should have been caught, and I think the New York Times was right to make that decision. Of course, here you have the New York Times, of course, immediately jumping to blame President Trump and people on the right for the rise in anti-Semitism, and I think they would it would behoove them to take a look at some of their own things that they've done, because I think some of the rhetoric that they've displayed in their own news pages, is probably worth taking a closer look at as well.
Mm-hmm. Rob, there's a bounty of things to discuss when it comes to the Democratic 2020 hopefuls. I don't even know where to begin with this one, but maybe we can talk about Elizabeth Warren. I'm not sure she's doing very well, but she keeps talking about taxing the rich to pay for the government policies. That's getting a little tiring, that repetitive thing of let's tax the rich.
Well, and I'll tell you what it also does, Bill, is it divides us as a country. And I think that this is something that that President Obama tapped into. He was able to, set up. I mean, you even had one candidate back in that 2008 race talk about the two Americas, right? as if we're not one America. I mean, I don't understand this desire to divide Americans. I mean, yes, I understand that the rich are successful and but they already pay a significant share of the income tax in this country. And I think that there might be other creative ways to come up with solutions to the problems Elizabeth Warren is trying to solve than to have class warfare, as she seems to so desire on so many of these policy ideas. And frankly, I'm not even sure how popular some of these policies are, because I think the American people are tired of the same old liberal solutions that grow government, take more freedom away from Americans and put it in the hands of bureaucrats in Washington. It seems like we want to move in the opposite direction, and I would hope in the year 2019 we can come up with different ways of doing things than the same ideas that have been tried now for a half a century and have failed.
Yeah. So when Elizabeth Warren says something like, you know, free college tuition, I always think to myself, there's got to be the law of unintended consequences. So if these millennials got their college paid for and then they reach the age of Social Security and they wanted benefits, might the politician say, hey, we paid for your college?
Well, you know, anything's possible. I mean,
look, I know.
I think that creating a new entitlement is exactly the wrong direction to go. I think that if we want – let's take education, for instance. If we want to try to make reforms to higher education, I think the first place we should look is the higher education institutions themselves. Look at the significant endowment at a place like Harvard and ask why a nonprofit educational entity it needs the federal government support when it has tremendous resources on its own. I think that this is where we've moved away from a society of helping each other. This is one of the great we started this conversation talking about the role of faith and religion. This is a great area where churches, in many cases, were able to provide the backbone of our communities, and instead we have moved in a situation where we expect the government to provide for us, and I think that's dangerous. I would much rather see colleges try some radical strategies on their own, let them experiment in the private sector, maybe cut tuition costs, as some colleges have done and successfully done, without harming their long-term viability. So there are different ways to go about this than having the government swoop in and try to solve all the problems.
I agree. Rob Blue is my guest, executive director, editor of the Daily Signal. Go to dailysignal.com. You can learn all about Rob and his staff. We're going to take a little break and be right back in just a minute. Welcome back to the show. My guest is Rob Bluey. He is the executive editor of the Daily Signal, and he is the smartest guy to the second power on this interview, and I'm always glad to have him on the show. Rob, let's talk a little bit about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. When she was talking about immigration, she said, I don't care if you're undocumented. I believe in fundamental human rights.
Yeah. I mean, look, I believe that regardless of where you come from or what your immigration status is, you shouldn't be discriminated against. We should treat them with the respect and the dignity, and they do have human rights. I think that the question at play here is whether or not we are going to be a country with borders, mm-hmm. or we're going to let everybody in and throw out the rule of law. And I think that that's where there's a deep divide between some people in Washington. I think there are some who are reasonable and understand that there's a problem. Look at Thomas Friedman, the columnist for the New York Times, who actually took the opportunity to visit the border, as my colleague Rachel Del Judas recently did, and see firsthand the problem at stake here. I mean, you have a system that has just simply been overwhelmed. Now, the Trump administration has proposed some rules to try to reform the asylum process and make it so that those who are seeking entry for whatever reason that they cite in terms of their asylum application are given the due process to go through that. But right now we have a system where it is just completely overwhelmed, and it's not helping anybody. This is not benefiting the poor immigrant who is trying to have a better life. And I really do think, Bill, there's an opportunity to come together and solve this problem. But when you have people who are so radically opposed to even some of the most basic and common sense reforms, I just don't see how the right and the left can do it. But perhaps if there's anybody who can strike a deal, it's the man who wrote the art of the deal, and that's President Trump. So I know a lot's weighing on this, weighing on his shoulders right now, but it is an issue that he's trying to work on. It's an area that he promised the American people he would solve, and I think he's frustrated he hasn't been able to do it.
Yeah, I would agree. Clearly one of the top three issues in this 2020 election, immigration.
Oh, I would say absolutely it is. I mean, the issues that President Trump certainly wants to be part of the conversation are immigration, trade, and perhaps healthcare, although I'm not sure all Republicans would agree with him on that last choice. But he has said he wants the Republican Party to be the party of healthcare. So immigration stands far and away number one because it's a problem that he hasn't been able to solve. It's only become worse with him in office. We're now seeing increasing numbers of immigrants trying to cross the border, and in many cases, as I said before, overwhelming the system. So, yeah, definitely one of the top tier issues, and it's something that I expect that you're going to hear both the Republican nominee, President Trump, and whoever gets the Democratic nominee have radically different positions on. So it'll be an opportunity for the American people to have a referendum on what direction this country goes.
Yeah. Rob, the city of Chicago always has this knack for producing interesting news, and this Jussie Smollett case just is not going away. And now Kim Fox has been subpoenaed. Where do you think this is going to end up?
It's unclear where it's going to end up. You are absolutely correct that this story has had the most twists and turns can remember of any in recent memory. I mean, just when you think you know where it's going, some new development pops up. Well, I can tell you this. I mean, I think that there are a lot of frustrated people in Chicago by what has gone on here. I mean, you saw that when the decision was made not to pursue charges. I mean, you even have the Democratic mayor, Rahm Emanuel, who's usually not on the side of you know, some conservatives, and you had their agreement that this was unjust in terms of how this decision all played out. So I can't predict on what happens next, although I do think that it's worth further examination. And for the sole reason that, as many people said, at a time when we are trying to fight discrimination against those who you know come under attack, and whether you believe in hate crimes laws or you're skeptical about what their effectiveness, I think Jussie Smollett did nobody any favors by creating so much confusion in this case, and so it's worth getting to the bottom of.
Yeah. Now, I think it was your colleague and our good friend Jarrett Stepman had a chance to sit down with Mike Lee, Senator Mike Lee.
He did. He has a new book out. That is Mike Lee, and the Daily Signal had one of the first opportunities to talk to him about it.
Very cool. And now I think he explained in that interview, and you can go to dailysignal.com to listen to it. Talked about why the Declaration of Independence makes America exceptional. Can you give us a couple highlights from that?
Yeah, well, certainly the Daily Signal is certainly somebody that Mike Lee is somebody that we follow very closely, because oftentimes he is the conservative standard bearer in the U.S. Senate, and I agree with him on the Declaration of Independence. I mean, it is one of our founding documents. It's something that everybody should read, not just on the 4th of July, but keep handy in your Heritage Foundation pocket Constitution. But I think that the thing that really struck me in terms of the interview is how it's applicable to what's going on today. Because, I mean, you try to take lessons and hopefully, as a father like me, convey them as a parent to your children and talk to them about the values that went into a founding document like that and how they make our country so exceptional and great. And so Bill, I strongly recommend your listeners not only check out the interview, but check out Senator Lee's book, because I think it's a worthwhile reminder of a timeless document.
Mm-hmm. I know it's kind of a hot news item right now about Caracas is going through some incredible chaos right now. Have you read anything about that today?
Yeah, well, we're monitoring it pretty closely. It is clearly something that's on the top of the mind of President Trump and others here in Washington, because what ends up happening there in Venezuela could have significant ramifications for that region of the world. Of course, there's been a lot of chaos now for the last couple of months. Two people claiming to be the leader of that country. Venezuela, for the past two decades, has undergone significant changes. It used to be one of the most economically free and prosperous countries in South America. Today, it is a basket case, thanks to socialism. Even though some on the left will try to distance themselves from the failure of socialism there in Venezuela, I think the people of Venezuela want a better life, and they're looking for a leader who is able to provide that. And so we should just keep them in our thoughts and prayers at this very difficult time. And Bill, I think it's a reminder of some of the dangers, as we've talked about on this show, when government tries to grow in ways and take power away from people and the liberty and freedom that was guaranteed to us in the Declaration of Independence, what the consequences are. And this is a real life and a tragic situation happening there.
Mm-hmm. I know you've got a couple of young sons, and I don't know if they're old enough to want to go see The Avengers, the new movie. Amazing opening weekend. Is that something they would want to go see?
My kids are not fans, believe it or not.
Okay.
So naturally, Dad doesn't get to go either. In those cases, we're a Star Wars family, so we're anxiously awaiting. We love the new trailer for Episode 9, and we're looking forward to the last in the series here for Star Wars. But you're absolutely correct. I mean, it's really great. I mean, I love going to the movies because I think it's a great family experience, and whatever movie you might be going to see, I think having that time together is something that I remember from my own youth. And at a time when it seemed that Hollywood was struggling to have a breakthrough, certainly Avengers Endgame delivered in a big way. So nice to see that. But, you know, it's family-friendly films are something that, that I think we only need to encourage more of. And Bill, I was just returning from Los Angeles where we had a meeting last week, and it's always good to be on the West Coast, at least for a few days.
Right.
And I talked to some people who are involved in the entertainment industry there, and boy, is it tough for Christians and conservatives to really break through. But they are trying. They're trying to get their messages out in film because they know what a powerful medium it is.
That is a hard place to function if you are a conservative or a Christian to be in that Los Angeles, because your ability to get hired is going to be, you could get cut out pretty fast of the process.
You have that right. I mean,
yes.
Absolutely. And remember, they for a long time, they had like secret underground agencies and things
yes.
like that were trying to help conservatives and Christians do that. So it's tough.
Yeah. Rob Louie, thank you so much for coming out of the show. You're a highlight every week. I so appreciate your willingness to bless our listeners with your wisdom and insights.
Thank you, Bill, and thanks to Faith Radio for all you do.
Yep. Rob Louie has been my guest, executive editor of the Daily Signal. Head over to dailysignal.com. You can learn all about Rob and his staff and the brilliant work they do. We'll take a short break, and we'll be back in just a minute.
You're listening to the Faith Radio Network, your home for relevant Bible preaching and family-focused teaching. Join interactive talk programming on topics that matter. Our mission is to lead people to Christ and to nurture believers in their faith through Christ-centered media. We hope that you grow closer to God each day as you listen, because together we're growing in our faith. Faith Radio. Learn more at myfaithradio.com.
Thanks to Rob Louie for coming on the show. I always look forward to chatting with him. Coming up next, Dr. Stephen Argue is going to come on and talk about his book that he wrote with Kara Powell called Growing With. And it's he's going to talk about it's never too early or too late to accept the child you have, not the child you wished you had, and work towards solutions rather than only identifying problems. Develop empathy that nudges rather than judges. Fight for your child, not against them. Connect your child with a faith and a church big enough to handle their doubts and struggles. That's all ahead. Dr. Stephen Argue is going to be with me in just a couple minutes.
At 6:30 on Faith Radio.
I always think I'm ready for the Dr. Tony Evans promos, but I'm never quite ready for them. They just come out of left field. I jump out of my seat a little bit. He's great. All right, my guest on Skype is Dr. Stephen Argue. He's written a book with Kara Powell called Growing With, Every Parent's Guide to Helping Teenagers and Young Adults Thrive in Their Faith, Family, and Future. He is the Applied Research Strategist for the Fuller Youth Institute, an associate professor of youth, family, and culture at Fuller Theological Seminary. I don't even know if that fits on a business card. But he loves to speak and write on kids and emerging adult spirituality. Steve, welcome to the show.
Hey, Bill. So good to be with you and great to be with your listeners.
Yeah, and your book is beautiful. And I'm just going to tease listeners right now. I have three copies. So
there's going to be
three extremely lucky listeners that are going to get their hands on a copy of your book. Kara Powell, I've spoken to her before. She's awesome. You guys are quite a team.
Oh, thanks. Love working with Kara, and it was great to work with this book to get together. Kara and her husband Dave have three teenage kids, and my wife Jen and I, we have a teenager and a couple in their 20s. So we kind of cover the range of this book. So this book is a research book, but it's also a bit confessional, I think, really kind of living out of our experiences as well as our research.
Yeah. Steve, I have to ask you, are you related to Don at all?
Actually, I am. It's a distant relative. All of us argue seem to be connected together, but it's amazing. Yeah, but what's amazing about Don is we actually made a connection a number of years back and when he was in Seattle. And I was a younger sort of budding youth pastor at the time. And he just spoke some amazing words to me and encouraged me in a moment when I needed it. So it's just kind of cool how God kind of brings those connections together. So
I love that. But let's talk about the book, because we want people to be aware of this book and to start get their hands on it. And I'm real curious about young people today. Are they really different from previous generations? And why does it matter?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, they are different. And I think this is the thing that we have to sort of keep in mind, is that every generation sort of inherits from an older generation a world that's given to them, right? And so I think with that, we just find that there's unique challenges that every generation has to work through. And I think when we begin to understand that, I think it allows us to have some more empathy. So we know from the research that life is moving faster for this generation. There's less institutional support. Families are working harder to make it. So not only do young people feel the pressure of what it means to grow up today, but families do as well. So for parents especially, and even grandparents, they feel that. And so, some research would even suggest that the pressure and anxiety that are being felt today, especially with today's teenagers, are actually feeling a tremendous amount of more extreme stress than adults feel or that teenagers felt a generation ago. And so in the book, we talk about this idea that in many ways, what teenagers are experiencing is sort of like 14 is the new 24, that a generation ago, the way 24-year-olds sort of had to deal with life's pressures, that's feeling earlier and earlier for our young people today. And if you're a parent, you know exactly what I'm talking about, the amount of pressure that they have to get into particular schools or to make it in this world today is quite stressful. And so you have that going on. And at the same time, what you have happening is you also see something else happening where there's sort of a delay in young people sort of navigating and finally sort of making it into the adult world. School is taking longer. More education is needed to attain jobs. Young people are getting married 5 years later, having children later. They're finding that financial independence and finishing school is coming later. So not only is 14 the new 24, but we also suggest, again, that maybe 28 is the new 18, where a generation or two ago, you would sort of leave the home at 18 and become an adult and do that. What we're seeing is sometimes it takes in the mid to late 20s for young people to sort of find their way. So if you think about it, it's almost like young people are experiencing their foot on the gas pedal and the brake pedal all at the same time. And if you've ever been in a car with like your 15, 16-year-old learning to drive, that's sort of a herky-jerky ride. And families are sort of feeling that not only as they're watching their kids, but in their relationships as well.
Yeah, Steve, are kids today just a little bit more programmed than a previous generation?
It depends how you use the word program, but I think we find in a lot of contexts, especially probably the middle class, you're finding that parents are really worried that their kids are going to make it. So in order to make it into, say, the school you want to get into, you got to start earlier and earlier, making sure that you're on the right team and the right school, taking the right classes. And so what we find a lot of times is, especially as I've worked with college students, that they finally get to the college that supposedly they've hoped to get to or their parents wanted them to get to. And then all of a sudden they have this moment of not knowing who they are or what they really want, because as you say, sometimes it gets programmed that way. And as one author talks about it, who did some work on this, they said we're sort of in the middle, especially in the middle classes, in the middle of a scholastic arms race, right? Where we are, my kids, I'm competing against your kid, and I care about you, but I kind of want my kid to get that spot. So I'm gonna hire the extra coach or the extra tutor or take the extra AP class. And you can imagine what this does to a young person. The amount of expectation and pressure that's placed on them is quite overwhelming. And I think it's just something for us to pay attention to. And again, as parents, I think we feel that pressure. We love them. We want them to succeed and make it in our world. And at the same time, this pressure actually is having an effect, I think, in some big ways.
Mm-hmm. Steve, your book is called Growing With, which is really critical to this discussion we're having right now, because it seems that there's a lot of people that feel as their kids grow older that they start growing apart from them and not growing with them. And I think it's interesting how adults are always trying to strive to connect with kids, but I think it's been pretty constant throughout most of history that kids are reluctant to want to connect to adults because they're trying to become their own adult, or they're trying to become their own special person apart from
Great. Yeah, you're exactly right. And if you're a parent, you know exactly what that's like. And you don't sometimes, especially in maybe the teenage years, every day you don't know which kid you're going to get. Is it the one that wants to sit next to you and talk, or is it the one that doesn't have anything to do with you, right? And so, I think for a lot of parents, and my experience has been not only as a researcher and an educator, but also as a youth pastor, as I worked with parents. I mean, I think when parents see their kids entering their teens and then their 20s, parents just feel this push and pull, and sometimes begin to give up. They start thinking, I don't know what to do with my kid. My kid used to run to me, and now they run away from me. My kid used to mimic everything that I do, and now they don't want to even like pretend like they want to relate to me. You know, I mean, my daughter would be like, hey, drop me off like a block from school and I'll walk. You know what I mean? And so there's the sense of, I think sometimes parents have a reaction. Sometimes they get afraid, and so they try to control the situation, or they just get anxious. But sometimes I see parents even just give up, kind of going, I guess that's the end of the road. I think we just kind of hold on for dear life now and hope that they make it. And so as our kids are growing up, sometimes there's this feeling of growing apart. And so what Kara Powell and I did, we said, you know what, as our kids grow up, we don't have to grow apart. We can actually grow with them. And we actually offer in the book a definition of what growing with means. And we say it's this: it's a mutual journey of intentional growth for both ourselves and our children that trust God to transform it all. I'll say it again because we're listening to it on the radio. Mm-hmm. A mutual journey of intentional growth for both ourselves and our children that trust God to transform us all. So it's a mutual journey. We're actually journeying together. And so what we can do is recognize that we're both on this path together of intentional growth. We need to realize that as our kids get older, we have to seek new resources instead of perhaps defaulting to old pattern. So it's a constant, dynamic, changing relationship. And it's something for both ourselves and our children. I think a lot of times what we see is parents, and I think I've done this too, where it's like, can someone help me fix my kid so that we can kind of get on with being a family? When instead of saying, you know what, it's not about fixing anybody, it's about you, child, and me, parent, growing together and recognizing that we're both in a process of growing. And so this growth then, we in many ways trust God to transform us all. And I think there is this transformational element that's there. I can't think of anything that's shaped me more or God has used more than being a father to my kids, that has brought out the best and worst in me that I've had to confront about myself as I have tried to not only parent but follow Jesus, and I'll be a part of that as well. And so, this idea of growing with is just that, how do we recognize the constant change that's going on with our kids, but recognize as parents that we're changing as well.
Steve, I'm curious, because when you've got a parent and a child and you want to grow with them, how do you get both parties to sign on to it? Like those spy movies where the two keys have to go in and get turned at the same time. Because exactly. I'm sure the parent would say, I want to grow with you, and the kid's going, no thanks.
Yeah, I think we have to recognize the fact that As you mentioned, there is this differentiation that's happening. A young person is starting to, as they're getting in their teens especially, and then even into their 20s, they're trying to figure out who they are. And so there's a healthy distancing that happens where they're saying, no, I've got this, or I'm figuring this out on my own, or I want to become my own person. But I think we can't misconstrue that to think that that means that they don't want us. As a matter of fact, we're finding that young people actually really want to connect with their kid, with their parents, and want to have that relationship. But I think what happens a lot of times is there's a misalignment of that relationship. Parents sometimes treat them like younger than they think they are, or we misunderstand what it means when they just want to be by themselves. And so I think we sort of have to start with a base understanding and an assumption that we're wired for relationship. The deep down, our kids want parents in their lives, and we have to navigate the ups and downs that come with that along the way. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes it gets misunderstood too. You know, like I gave you the big definition of growing with, but I think another way to think about this too is I think maybe a simple way to remember this is maybe we can replace when I was your age, that phrase, with a different phrase, which I would say, tell me more. Like a lot of times as parents and as adults, a lot of times we say that to our kids, like, hey, you know, well, when I was your age. And we think that that's sort of like this barrier making statement, like, oh, we're really going to connect with them. But for a lot of young people, that's like, this is like a bridge, because they're like, when you were my age, the Berlin Wall was still up. There was no internet. There was a smoking section on the plane. Mm-hmm. You had answering machines and cassette tapes and, you know, the dagger for me. And you wore parachute pants. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I mean, I think we just need to realize that even though we were teenagers once, doesn't mean that we can relate to who teenagers are today. And so really, we, like my wife and I, Jen, we literally use this phrase, tell me more. We actually had a piece of art in our family room that said, tell me more. And we use this phrase to remind ourselves that as we interacted with our kids and they brought things up to us, instead of to quickly solve it or assume that we understood them, to pause, to look them in the eye and say, well, tell me more about that. What's actually going on there? And I think what happens at that point, we begin to give them space to actually express their own thoughts, feelings, emotions, and for us to actually listen to where they were coming from. Now, I'll tell you, there's sometimes I hold my breath when I do that because I'm like, what's going to come out of their mouth next? But I also think it's an opportunity to show them that we're willing to hang in there with them in the highs and lows of our relationship. And I'll tell you something, that's really powerful for a kid, and not only in relationship to their parents, but in some of my own work with college students, I realized that one of the biggest things that college students actually care about is their relationship with their grandparents. It wasn't even like something I was seeking out in some of the research that I was doing, but the way that they talked about their grandparents was something deep and meaningful to them. And they were really afraid of actually losing them. And so, you know, I just kind of go, that's just such a beautiful thing. And so there are probably some grandparents that are even listening out there kind of going, I don't even know if my grandkid knows that I exist, or we don't really talk that much. Don't underestimate how much they think about you and how much they care for you. And you can maybe sit up a little bit straighter today, just kind of knowing that they actually think about you more than maybe they let on.
Yeah. Steve, I'm looking at your picture on the back cover of the book, and you are a young man. And I remember when I was your age, I never had this much wisdom.
I'm not that young.
Oh, yeah, so, you look young. Yeah. All right, let me take a break. I've got three copies of Stephen and Kara's book called Growing With to give away, and I will put the names in a drawing, and then three lucky people will get a copy of this book sent to them. If you want to be in that drawing, send me an email, bill@myfaithradio.com. In the subject line, put Growing With. Make sure you put your name and address so I'll know where to send it. If you're a winner, we'll take a short break and then return with Dr. Stephen Argue in just a minute. Dr. Stephen Argue is my guest. He's written a book called Growing With. He co-authored that with Kara Powell. And it's a beautiful book filled with great information about how to grow with your teen and help them through young adulthood, thrive in their faith, family, and future. And let's see, you know, just the fact that, Steve, you've got growing with as your title, you've created a verb called withing.
Yeah.
So explain that.
Yeah, so it's a little bit of what we just talked about in the previous section. This idea of withing, we sort of mean a family's growth and supporting each other as children grow more independent. So mm-hmm. kind of what we've talked about this for, this push and pull in the relationship that's going on there. The job of the parent is to continue to pursue the kid. And this is, you know, this is a big discovery for me. When my kids were young, I don't know about you, but or parents out there, but I swear my kids knew the moment I fluttered my eyelids in the morning that I was up, and they were like, you know, in my bedroom wanting me to get up. And I was just thinking, when is the day when they're not always like right there, you know, like if I could just have 5 minutes of like alone time, that would be amazing. Right. and then all of a sudden it comes to this point where all of a sudden they're not around quite as much. And you're kind of like, oh, I kind of like this. I could actually read a chapter in a book or, you know, you do something. But then it hit me like, oh, you know what? They're not coming around quite as much anymore. They're kind of finding their own space and doing their own thing. And I realized that I was the one that needed to go, and instead of them knocking on my door, to go knock on their door and to sit down and say, you know, how are you doing? What's going on in your life? Do you want to hang out? These type of things. And this is something that, you know, we do with kids in their, you know, 5, 6, 7 years old to when they're teenagers, even into their 20s. And, you know, I'm still learning on a regular basis how to with my kids, if you will, in the sense of being attentive to their interests, finding ways to connect with them and taking that initiative. And, you know, they typically most of the time appreciate it. And, you know, I think that's part of the journey that's there. And so, again, we can't just sit back and think that, well, we kind of hung out with them when they're younger and it's going to carry through. It's this constant relational connection that we have, and we try to associate that.
Mm-hmm. Steve, mm-hmm. how about when you're trying to support your kids' faith journey, and the faith journey includes, ooh, massive amounts of doubt, and I don't want to go to church. I don't want to go to church anymore.
Yeah. So this is a big one for us families of faith as we navigate that. And, you know, we've done the Fuller Youth Institute has done a lot of different research projects on the faith journeys of young people, of teenagers in particular. And we've done more with young adults as well. And, you know, I think what we just need to realize is a couple of things. First of all, this idea of faith. A lot of the ways that we often explain it is this, is that sometimes we think of faith as a noun where I have faith or I find faith and I'm afraid I'm going to lose faith. And if you listen to the language that's used there, it's like it's something like we possess and we might lose, right? And so a lot of times I think in this idea of faith or church, when our kids all of a sudden are like, I don't believe that, or I don't want to go to church, we start going, oh my gosh, they've lost their faith. Where did it go? We need to find it. We need to like, you know, double the amount of church. You know, we got to somehow fill them up again or something like that. And, you know, I say that jokingly, but, you know, as a parent, we worry about that a little bit. But if we can also think of faith as not just a noun, but also of a verb, where we don't just have faith, but we faith, we recognize that faithing is something that's growing and changing and morphing and developing like every other part of our life. So when a young person doubts, or a young person says, I don't know if I believe that, or why are we going to church today? Instead of thinking, oh my gosh, they're chucking the faith and becoming atheists, we can actually stop and just kind of go, oh, wait a minute. They are learning to make their faith their own. That faith invites doubt rather than avoids it. It's part of them owning their own faith, asking deeper questions, and growing to continue to ensure that their faith keeps up with the complexities of the world that they are a part of. And so what we find a lot of times is that 70% of young people experience doubt, but of those 70%, only about half of them actually tell it to anybody. And we feel like that's something that should be worrisome, that it's not doubt that's toxic to faith, but silence. If we can actually be parents and we can be adults that are willing to hold those questions with our kids or with young people, and to say, hey, it's okay. We are in this process and you're growing in your search to understand God and the world that you live in and your own faith, that actually could be something that's encouraging to them rather than discouraging. Now, mm-hmm. what's sometimes scary about that for parents is there's something almost contagious about our faithing as well, that if my kid raises questions about the faith and about their faith journey, that it actually has an effect on me. I feel anxious, or it raises questions that maybe I have not answered before. And so I want to kind of shut it down, or I don't really want to go there, or I just kind of want to tie it up in a neat bow rather than to hang in the messiness with them, which is really the way our faith journeys are, right? They're not really nice and neat and clean. They actually are filled with this struggling and striving toward living out our faith in a very, very messy world. So if we can, as parents especially, give space for our kids to do that, that really helps us. This research impacted me so much that what I would do is I had a deal with my daughters that, you know, if I invited them out for coffee, like, I'd pay, so they'd always say yes. It was a great strategy. But we also, when we got together for coffee, I just kind of said to them, I said, hey, let's sometime during coffee, let's just agree that we're going to just have like a serious conversation about life or faith or whatever. You know, we sort of agreed on that. So I wasn't surprising them with anything. But a regular question that I've asked them, and I still ask them, is this. I say, tell me something you don't believe that you still think I believe. Tell me something
great,
you don't
great
believe
approach.
Yeah, that you still think I believe. And, you know, then I'll be really honest with you. I hold my breath, right? Like, I wonder what they're going to say. Now, sometimes the conversation goes deep. Sometimes it doesn't. But I want them to know that they can voice their faithing in relationship with me. And as their dad, I'm going to hang in there with them. And I want to continue to create spaces like that for them to navigate their faith, because I found, especially in some of my research with college students, that one of the things they're deathly afraid of is that if they voice a differing opinion of maybe what their parents or their grandparents or their adult in their faith community believe, that they are going to lose a sense of relationship. And so they would say to me, they'd say, Steve, I'm not really afraid of the doubt that I'm experiencing intellectually right now. I think I'm going to work through it. But what I'm really afraid of is this, is that if I voice my opinion that my mom will be upset, that my dad will be angry, that my youth pastor will be disappointed, and my church will put me on the prayer list. And let's just be honest, none of us want to be on the prayer list, right? and so you see what's happening there is that especially for, in this case, college students, intellectual doubt has relational fallout for a young person. And if we're not careful, we actually set them up to actually feel that dissonance rather than saying, no, I'm going to hang in there with you. I'm going to step closer to you. Let's have these conversations, because in the end, the goal is not to just completely doubt. That's not where they can stay forever. But it is part of the faithing process as they step closer to understanding how amazing God is and how their faith can keep up with the complexities of the world that they're experiencing.
Mm-hmm. Steve, I got about a minute left, so we're going to have to talk faster. This is an observation I'd like to make, which no one would pay me for. But as I look at the parents' fears and feelings of being disconnected from their kids, all I have to do is look at the way everyone's looking at their cell phones, parents mm-hmm. and kids.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think it's an observation. And one of the things I try to tell parents is this, is that I think we got to be careful to not blame technology for our relationships, but I do think they do amplify how our relationships are going. So I think we can use technology to connect with our kids, but I also think we can be in the same room and be miles away because we're on our phone. And I think we all have to pay attention to that. And I think what we find from research in a lot of ways is that kids are great imitators of their parents. So I think we have to be careful to not point the finger at just young people, but to ask some hard questions about how we're using technology and how it's an extension of our humanity and our relationships, and do what we can to continue to connect with our kids.
Really, really interesting, Steve. And this book is beautifully written and really great. Thank you so much for doing the show. Let me just plug it again here. Stephen Argue and Kara Paul's book is called Growing With: Every Parent's Guide to Helping Teenagers and Young Adults Thrive in Their Faith, Family, and Future. You can be a lucky winner if you send me bill@myfaithradio.com. Put in the subject, growing with. Make sure you put your name and address there. If you win one of my three copies I have been given, I can give away, you will be happy to get this book. We're going to take a little break, and we will be back in just a few minutes. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.